a real sense that God has just pressed upon me is that we need to continue speaking about faith, because that is one of the key building blocks for us, and not just the faith and expectation, but the faith that carries us through those times that we don't understand and those times that are difficult, so that we don't get knocked off track for weeks and months and years. So as we think about the armor that God has given us, I just remind you that we are encouraged in Ephesians 6 verse 16 to take up the shield of faith, with which we can, you can, extinguish all the flaming arrows of the evil one. How many flaming arrows? Is there a number on it? Is there a limit on it? It's all. Okay. Good. Lovely coffee. The classic film scene. You see the bunch of people, and there's a bridge over the ravine or the river, and it's the only way to the treasure. And the first guy puts their foot on, and they go to the next one, and then there's that. You get it, it's a classic, isn't it? There's a bit of a crack, and then you see the debris fall, and the camera follows it down as it smashes, and they all move back, and there's a bit of squeal from one of the girls and two of the boys, and a bit of mopping of the brow, and then eventually up steps the guide or the hero. With scarcely veiled contempt, he looks back at them, and then he steps out over the bridge, because he's been there countless times before, and he knows that it will carry his weight, and they follow behind him. Faith figures fairly high in the New Testament. Over 230 times faith is mentioned in the New Testament, so it's probably quite important. And this is how it works. Satan attacks us, we respond with faith, and we carry on without falling or failing. That's the way it works, isn't it? Good. It sounds great, but what does it really mean? And what are the flaming arrows that the enemy uses? And how do we respond with faith? What does it look like in real life? How does it work in everyday experience? So that on the journey that God has for us, on the journey towards the treasure, we can put our full weight down without thinking about whether it'll give way. The more I talk to people about what faith looks like, about their understanding of what the devil throws at us, the more I think there's misunderstanding in a way that makes us vulnerable. And so I just want to teach a little bit into that today. Now, for some of you, this is incredibly familiar. So please bear with me, because if you know all this stuff completely, then you will be mature in the faith. And if you're mature, you'll be gracious enough to pray for other people now and not just think that you're bored. But that we're always getting new Christians and baby Christians, and largely there's always something else to learn as well. So the shield and the arrows, just to remind you that Paul was referring specifically to Roman army armor. And the shield, the Roman shield specifically, was large, and though it was wooden, it was covered in leather, and when they went out into battle, that leather would be soaked in water. And often the soldiers would join their shields together. They had a specific formation called the tortoise formation, as they moved slowly forward, where the shields would be over their heads, and it would be down at the front of them and down at the back, and they would be complete cover for the army. And the joined shields would form an effective barrier, both to arrows penetrating, but also the soaking leather would put out the fire of the arrows. Now, there were other armies with other types of shields, and quite a lot of them had wooden shields, not covered in leather and soaked in water. And they got a little bit troubled when a flaming arrow came. And as their shield caught on fire, they would have to get rid of it. Then they'd be hugely vulnerable to stones, to rocks, to spears, to javelins, to swords. So the Roman shield was specifically designed to deal with flaming arrows. And the shield of faith is specifically designed to deal with the flaming arrows of the enemy. Sometimes we end up using other things. It's the shield of faith that we're supposed to use. Gospel shoes are no use against the flaming arrows. I know I'm really struggling with faith, but so if I just press on with the gospel, it'll be all right. That's like just going like that to a flaming arrow. It doesn't really work. You're supposed to be using the shield of faith. And the flaming arrows, what are they? People talk about oppression, people talk about temptation, but it's important to understand that the fiery arrows are almost entirely about the devil's strategy to influence our thoughts to believe lies, primarily about God and his goodness, but also about others and also about ourselves. So it's strategies to influence our thoughts. And we know that that's where we do so much of our battling, especially when things are hard. And it's to do that in a way that destroys our relationship with God and others and spoils our true sense of identity and calling as God's children. So that whatever circumstances, situations, relationships, illnesses, disappointments, abuse, whatever, the strategy is the same in essence. Take, twist, influence our thinking until we are taken to a place where we no longer believe in the goodness of God, or we no longer trust him in some way. As Christians, we'll trust him in some ways, but there'll be some ways that are stolen. That we no longer are believing in his goodness, in his kindness, that he's nice and that he likes us. That we're no longer believing in his promises, that he keeps them, in his word, that it's true. And when we do that, and when the shield is lowered, we can be injured enough to be taken out of the battle. So we think about the shield of faith. What is faith? It's not a feeling. Faith is not a feeling, though it does affect our feelings. And there are some Christians who kind of believe that you can kind of pump faith up like a feeling. Come on, right. Faith. But I realize it probably wasn't pretty, but you get the idea. But the faith is not a feeling. It's actually a choice. It's actually a decision. It's primarily about God, not about people. When we're in secure environments with people, sometimes we feel that we're feeling more faith. But it's only when we're out of those secure environments when we find out what our faith really is like. It's something as well that needs to be put into practice, and that's how we know we have it. And it isn't simply about personal confidence. It's acting out of the fundamental belief in the goodness of God, and that what he says and what he does can be completely trusted, no matter what the evidence might seem to suggest. That's what faith is. And that's what we're fighting for. And faith, like forgiveness, like true friendship, like attitude to authority, is easy in theory, but difficult in practice. And like all of those things, it's only proved under pressure. It's easy to forgive someone when they haven't really hurt us much. But that's not really forgiveness. When we've been deeply hurt and we forgive because we understand what forgiveness is about in the light of what we've received from God, It's when we are deeply hurt and we respond in that way that we understand about forgiveness, and we know we do. It's easy to have a great attitude to authority when we agree with them. The only time we know that we have the right attitude to authority is when they ask us to do something that we don't want to do. And faith, when it all makes sense, isn't faith. It's just understanding. It's when we don't understand, it's when we can't see, it's when it feels unfair that it becomes faith. And our faith gets attacked when stuff happens that brings what we believe into question. That the enemy then gets to work undermining our faith and influencing our thoughts. Think about human relationships. I'm just going to pick on Andrea for a moment because everyone knows Andrea. Is that right, Marty? We'll see how it goes. Okay. Yeah, yes. So, do you have faith in me? Depends. You see? And here we have an example of what faith doesn't look like. oh, I'm picking on Marty now. That's not. Yeah. So let's imagine that something happens that doesn't make sense. We see whispered meetings in corners in the church, and all of the time Andrea's in those meetings. We can see it. And one day as we're walking past that room, Joe and myself, we just hear the words, "On no account is anyone to tell Jeff and Joe about what's going on." Can you feel a tension already? And then how we respond says a lot about the depth of our relationship and the level of our trust. And given that we know Andrea's character, and given that we know her heart towards us, we know that whatever it is won't be bad. And we know that if we need to know, she'll tell us. And so we're then able to enjoy the surprise party that she has been organizing. Except she knows I don't like surprise parties, so she wouldn't be doing that. Now, humanly speaking, we tend to interpret what happens through our grids. Levels of trust in others, levels of brokenness in self. So if there's tension, or there's conflict, or there's misunderstanding, there's what happened, what we actually saw, and what we actually heard, and then we interpret. We interpret with our explanation, our justification, our reasons, our assessments, our judgments. We add in a few expectations, and a few assumptions, and a few prejudices, mix it all up to all form part of our understanding, and it isn't long before we're driven by the interpretation more than the event. And it isn't long before we're driven by our imagination more than reality. And we get to the point of going, we're right, they're terrible, the relationship's ruined, and it's all their fault. And we can always find people to agree with us. And it's the same process with God. Something happens that causes us to doubt God's promises or his goodness or to question them. And those flaming arrows are sent out trying to influence our thoughts. And our brokenness and our history form the grid through which we interpret. Our expectations, our assumptions, our prejudices form part of the understanding. And it isn't long before, with God, we're driven by our interpretation more than the event. And it isn't long before we're driven by our imaginations more than the reality. How could a good God let that happen? My faith has been ruined and it's his fault. And we can always find people to agree with us. And we forget who's behind this stuff. It's the flaming arrows. Always when you've got any doubt about what's going on, go back to Genesis chapter 3 and Satan in the garden, where you've got two people who are blissfully happy in what God has given them before a couple of questions come. So, God says to you, you can't eat from any of the fruit in the garden then. Oh, no, 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 we can. Anything but that one. And suddenly, God, from being bountiful provider, has become God who is restrictive. He's told us if we do that, we'll die. But you won't die. You'll actually become like him. And that's why he doesn't want you to eat it. Do you get it? We've talked about this many times, but that's the way it works. Doubt his goodness. Doubt the truth of what he's saying. That's the way temptation so often occurs. Let's have another little picture of faith under pressure. In Mark 14 and verse 22, we read about Jesus sending the disciples ahead. He goes up to pray on the mountainside. The boat's out there buffeted by the wind. Then they see Jesus walking on the lake, and they're terrified. They think it's a ghost. They cry out in fear. Jesus says, don't worry. Peter says, Lord, if it's you, tell me to come to you. Isn't that staggering, first of all? People focus on Peter's doubt. But wasn't that amazing? Would anyone else? Everyone else is in the boat going, we're going to die. He's going, would that be all right if I walked on the water? It's pretty amazing, isn't it? And he comes. And then it says, when he saw the wind, he was afraid and began to sink, crying out, Lord, save me. Immediately Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. You of little faith, why did you doubt? So Peter asked a huge ask. He responded to Jesus. He said, if you say come, I'll come. And Jesus said, come. So he responded to that. Stunning stuff. But when he became conscious of the effects of the wind and began to feel vulnerable, he also began to sink. Now, bear in mind that Peter, on a beautiful sunny day, couldn't have walked in 10 centimeters of water on a flat pond. Bear that in mind, first of all. The point has got nothing to do at all with simply the walking on the water. He couldn't do it without Jesus. But in a funny sort of way, if he'd been on a very flat pond that was only 10 centimeters, he wouldn't have been worried now. Because if he'd fallen, he'd have just got a little bump. And the point is that Jesus said, come. And that meant it was okay. Whether it was easy or whether it was hard. Whether it was calm or whether it was a storm, whether it was fathoms deep or whether it was inches deep. But what happened is a reality it's a picture of what happens to us. That when Jesus calls us, very often we do start out full of excitement. We have a desire to follow him and to focus on him and what he said. And then we slowly get overwhelmed by what we can see. The obstacles, the difficulty, the risk. And in our panic and in our confusion, what happens is we forget the call. And we forget the power of the one who called. So we focus on the problems and the weakness of the one who's been called. That's us. And we don't focus on the power of the one who's called us. And we get that sinking feeling in our hearts, in our spirits. And what happened with Peter reminds us that our faith will be challenged by what we see. We will have those moments when we go, it isn't happening. I don't see it. But we also get challenged by what we don't see. That the shield of faith helps us press on till the unseen becomes seen. Even if it doesn't in our generation. When you read through Hebrews 11, that whole list of faith, there's some amazing stories there. By faith, Noah, when warned about things not yet seen, in holy fear built an ark to save his family. Now, faith for him was challenged by people basically going, you're an idiot. By being mocked, by being told he'd lost his senses. Faith for Abraham, when called to go to a place that he'd receive as his inheritance, he obeyed and he went, even though he didn't know where he was going. Faith for him looked like complete uncertainty and the unknown. And there weren't even maps. And there was no GPS. And he hadn't got email. And he had no mobile phone. He had no idea where he was going. He had no idea of the other nations that he'd be coming into contact with. By faith, Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau in regard to their future. He swapped hands. He displeased his son by bringing words of prophecy that were completely against tradition, because the younger son got blessed in greater measure than the older son. So faith for him meant going against all the tradition he knew and incurring his favorite son's displeasure. Moses' parents, it meant hiding a baby when that meant they could be killed. Faith for them meant a huge risk to their life. Moses refused to be known as the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He chose to be ill-treated with the people of God rather to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a short time. So faith for him meant a huge lifestyle sacrifice, from prince to shepherd. By faith, the people passed through the Red Sea as on dry land. Faith for them meant walking through walls of water either side. And when you're halfway across, that's got to be pretty scary, hasn't it? Faith for Joshua meant 7 times, 7 days around the walls. What must it have looked like on the 6th day when people from the walls were shouting down, "You're a moron, you're an idiot, nothing's happened, nothing's shaken"? Where the people are going, "Are you sure about this, Joshua? We see no signs." You don't see it. You don't understand it. But God has said it. God has instructed. God has guided. God has promised. Faith leads us to make decisions that would be ridiculous otherwise. Otherwise, it isn't faith. It's more like common sense. So how do we keep the shield in place? What does it look like? For me, when I'm doing a crossword puzzle, which I don't do very often, I'm always looking for the key words that I'm sure of. I'll put those in first, and then I can test the things that I'm less sure of about whether they fit with those key words. Now, it is, of course, possible to completely fill in a crossword and have it completely wrong, but it'll all fit. If you start with the wrong keywords, you can just put other words in around. It'll be wrong, but it'll all fit. If you make a mistake with the keywords, it messes everything else up, because you're fitting them around the wrong ones. And faith works like that. Our keywords in the crossword puzzle of life are about God's goodness, God's faithfulness, God's kindness. We put those in first. The other key words about God being truth, and that he keeps his promises. So we put those in. And then if the other words that we get, that our circumstances, that our situations seem to suggest are true, if they don't fit with those key words, then they're wrong, even though they seem right. That's what faith looks like. Now, some of us have had the key words wrong for years. We were taught them. We were taught them by the way our parents behaved, or by what we heard, or by what we saw at Sunday school or church. We were taught them by what we experienced and how the enemy helped us to interpret the story. So we got used to filling in the crossword puzzle of our lives completely wrong. Ah, that means that. Oh, yeah, that's what's going on. The words all fit together, but none of them are correct. And God is giving us, and has given us, started to give us new words, the right words. And we're starting to fill it in correctly. Some of us are well on the journey. Some of us are just starting. Some of us, it's time to start today, because you're just figuring out that some of your key words are wrong. And for all of us, there are certain things that we can do to help us take hold of faith, to employ the shield that we've been given that'll help us stand firm and not run away, but persevere when we want to give up. That'll help us to move out and take action and be bold to take hold of the unseen. So there are four really important keys that again, you should be very familiar with, but I'm going to remind you of before we come to a close. The first is about understanding truth. In many aspects of life, I've seen it demonstrated clearly to do with the Royal Mint. The best way to train people to understand what a counterfeit is by handling the real. You handle the real. You handle real money, what it feels like, how it folds, how it smells, how it looks. And if you work for the Royal Mint, you will do that and do that and do that and do that and do that. And then 90% of the fakes you can find out immediately. Simply by feel or smell or touch. The best way to spot the counterfeit is to handle the real. And that's the same when it comes to matters of truth and faith. There are millions of lies the enemy could try to get us to believe. So if I did a series on the lies of the enemy, it would go on forever. And it would be unbelievably pointless. Because the more you get to know the truth, what the Bible says, what Jesus teaches, the more you'll spot the flaming arrows. And I have to say this, there are some here, you still don't read your Bibles. And it's really important. You say, I find it hard to read. You can get audio Bibles. No problem. There's some, you say, oh, I don't have much time, but you do have time for other stuff. And understanding the truth, understanding faith fundamentals will protect you better than anything else. Better than years of counseling, better than hours of prayer ministry, is understanding the truth. And so you can get it in, you can get Bibles, you can get teaching, you can get audio, you can have DVDs, you can actually get this stuff on your iPods, you can get it on your phones. There are lots and lots of ways to do this. There's no substitute for it because it protects our hearts and our faith and sets us free. Get your thoughts lined up with the truth. You'll be protected. Secondly, worship. Worship is great for declaring truth and declaring love. It connects our hearts and our spirits. There's a connection between words and music that helps us to remember the words. Words of faith and truth. And there are people who say to me, reasonably regularly, yeah, worship's not my thing. And I just go, I stay calm. And I remind them, it's everybody's thing. It needs to be. It must be. And I don't say that in a should, ought, nasty way, but it is life. Worship is life to us. And guys often struggle. And the reason they struggle is because this battleground is so important. Worship welcomes the presence and the power of God. And as our relationship and trust grows, then the flaming arrows are no longer effective. No wonder the enemy doesn't want us to worship. Worship breaks stuff in us. And again, CDs, MP3 players, phones, cars, trains, planes, we can worship anywhere, out loud where possible, if madness is not an issue for people. And I want to say too, that if you don't regularly spend time in worship, it's often an indicator of deeper struggles with connection with God. The third thing is remembering. Making it a practice of remembering all the good things God has done for us. If there are specific days in your life where God has really moved, celebrate them. Have anniversaries. Tell the story of what God has done. The Bible clearly says to God's people, God speaks, and often when they've gone astray, he says, you forgot. You forgot what I did. You look at the Psalms, many of the worship songs, they tell the story of what God did for his people. They keep rehearsing that story. Remembering is a discipline. Journals, celebration, anniversaries, it's when we forget that our faith comes under attack. And tied in with that is testimony. Telling the story of what Jesus has done and is doing. Speaking it out loud. We're going to do that next week in terms of testimony. Telling our own story. Listening to the stories of others. All helps to build faith. All helps to remind us of the truth. If you are struggling, one of the best things you can do is tell the story of when you saw God move in power in your life. Because faith will start to rise again. You'll be amazed at the difference it makes. Just as an aside before we finish, the picture of the Roman army is a telling one. It's a group of soldiers protecting themselves and protecting each other, which is far more effective than a group of individuals. Someone stumbles, they're helped up. Someone drifts out of formation, they're pulled back in. It reminds us that though we take personal responsibility for faith to take up the shield, it's got a corporate element to it as well. We share our struggles and weaknesses, and so we find help. We look out for others. We're prepared to give input. That's why a community of faith is vital. That's why being isolated makes us so vulnerable. And here's the amazing thing. You can borrow other people's faith when you're struggling. When you're struggling, just connect yourself to someone who's full of faith, and they can recharge your faith batteries. This treasure hunting, I don't have faith for that. Go with someone who does. And you soon will. Borrow other people's story when you can't remember yours. Yeah, God is at work. He's doing this. Borrow their boldness when you've lost yours. Just put your arm through theirs and you can go together. When we're struggling in our faith, so often we tend to pull away at the very, very point we need to press in. It's the last thing we should do, and the first thing we should choose to do is to engage, because the enemy loves to divide and conquer. And if we choose to walk out our struggles in and with the family of God, it destroys his strategy. And it helps to create that atmosphere and that culture of faith. I'm on the last page now. Don't stop. Who said don't stop? I like you. Steve McCracken, you know Dave McCracken, the prophetic guy, and his son Steve? He says this, I've said it before and it bears repeating, often your problem is not your problem. Your focus on your problem and your focus during your problem is what your problem really is. It's quite good that, isn't it? It doesn't make any more sense saying it twice, so I'm going to explain it instead. So, when your faith is challenged by a problem, where do you focus? What does that tell you about yourself and what you really believe? It's when there's problems and difficulties that you find out what you really believe. Faith when all is going well, faith when we understand, like I said before, isn't actually faith. It's understanding or personal confidence. What do the difficult times tell us about our faith? What are the lies that keep returning when we have problems? Because those are the ones we need to see off once and for all. I want to finish with a couple of stories that I've told before, but they're important, so I'll tell them again. I want to remind you about the impala, which is a deer-like animal, which has got the capacity to jump over 3 meters and cover a distance in that jump of over 10 meters. But they can be kept in an enclosure in a zoo with just a 1 meter wall. Why is that? They won't jump if they can't see where their feet are going to land. So faith is the ability, if you like, to jump when you can't see where your feet are going to land. And if fear means that we won't do that, then we can be enclosed in something very small instead of released into fullness. If God says jump, will you jump, even though you can't see where your feet will fall? That journey of faith takes us beyond those powerful limitations of fear and doubt. If Jesus says come, we'll be safe on the water, no matter how high the waves. The other story is that my brother, when we were in the long hot summers just before university, we used to go out on long boats on the waterways. It was just a beautiful thing to do. And one of those days, I was walking about on the top of the boat, catching the rays, and it was just lovely. My brother climbed up from underneath. He just climbed up, I saw him smile, and he went, "Down!" And I just dropped instantly onto the top of the boat, or actually onto Janet Buxton, who was underneath me. I apologized, and she was very gracious about it, but she moved to Canada. So I don't think she got over it. And at the instant I dropped down, we went under a metal bridge that would have done me serious damage and could have killed me. Now, I want to just revisit that for a moment, because the reason I responded like I did was because of my relationship with my brother. He would not have said that if it wasn't really important. What would most people have done? Think about it in reality. What would most people have done? Down. Why? Bump. Down. Who are you to tell me to get down? Bump. And we are like that with God, too. God says, down. We go, why? Bump. Who are you to tell me? I'll get down when I'm ready to get down. Is this not true? And then the enemy gets us to reinterpret the story. So it goes like this. Down. Why? Bump. Ooh, so God's just hit you with a bridge then, has he? Yes, he has. And I'm going to tell my story of how I've lost my faith because God hit me with a bridge. It would be funny if it wasn't tragic. And I'm on a slight rant now, so just in the middle of this rant, I just want to say we're getting Testimony Sunday soon, and I'm looking forward to all of the testimonies. It's going to be fantastic. But please, in your testimonies, don't focus on the fact that God asked you to do something and you struggled for 6 months before you finally got round to it. Now, many people do that, and they think that that makes them seem far more human and approachable and will encourage other people into faith. Actually, what it does is it doesn't honor God at all. So if you did struggle for 6 months, I would just lay that to one side and say, I had a bit of struggle, but then I was obedient and God blessed, because we want God to get glory. And if you do have an approach to God that says, he asked me to do things and I finally get round to it after a big argument, please stop it. Because you're going to get clanked by a bridge on a regular basis. And then you're going to feel it was God's fault. It's much better not to have the battle. It really is. This is Jeff's idiot guide to having a simpler Christian life. That is like, don't do the fighting bit, because it never leads you anywhere good. Learn the trust that means you say yes straight away, because that leads you into blessing, because God is good and God is kind and God is nice. Is that okay? Bit of a rant, but okay, good. So faith is shown in obedience. Faith is shown in obedience. It's yes, Lord. It's when he says jump, it's how high. Not why. Not when I have the time. Not but I'm scared. Faith is shown in obedience. And the more we understand the goodness of God, And the more we're locked into the truth about his word and who he is, and the more we're locked into worship, and the more we are operating together, the less those flaming arrows will cause us to reinterpret the story in a way that takes us away from God and helps us not understand who we are. So we get to cross the bridge because it will hold our weight. And there are many who've gone ahead of us to show us. Noah, Abraham, Moses, Joshua, Gideon, the list goes on. There are those who are stepping out now and they're saying, see, it holds your weight. It holds your weight. We're learning to align with the unseen kingdom reality. We're learning to enter into the promised land, not focusing on the giants or on the battle, but on the power and on the love of the one who promised. I think I'm done now. So, we're going to worship again, please. But we're going to pray just before that. And just two particular things. For some of you, today is your day for changing the key words in your crossword puzzle, so that you begin in your times of pressure with the goodness of God and not with those questions. So that's really important. That's really important. And for some, and tied in with that, is that decision that you're making to stop interpreting the story in ways that take you away from God's goodness and be determined to press in with faith in those ways. So I'm just going to ask, quite simply, if you have been specifically challenged in those areas and specifically challenged that when the hard times come, that your reactions have come out of faithlessness, and you want to nail that today, that you'll just stand now so we can pray for you. This is a...
Say that again.
I don't know that I can.
So it's clear what you're asking.
So, yes, if you are... I know that you have been not responding with faith when times are difficult, and that is something that you are determined to do. Is that better? It's a good job Ken's here. I'm so tired, my brain's not working, but my spirit's alive. and that's why I have Ken. Great. Can I just say, woohoo? That's very good. That's fantastic. I'm presuming the rest of you are full of faith, so can you go and pray for these guys now? Because now that must be the whole church sorted. Brilliant. Just gather around them and we'll just pray for them. Lord, we want to thank you that you're just at work in this church, and that faith is growing, and that you are building the walls, and that you're clearing away the rubble. I just want to pray for each person that stood right now. I want to ask, Lord, that right now as they respond, even now take a step of faith and obedience, that you would begin that process of putting the key words in place in that crossword puzzle, so that right in the center of their beings will be a fundamental understanding of your goodness and your faithfulness. And I want to ask, Lord, that You will help each one to step away from fear, to step away from negativity, to step away from old patterns of thinking when the pressure is on, and to move into those new ways that align themselves with you and your truth and your love. I want to ask, Lord, that you'd release them from the sting and the pain of what happened in the past. And ask, Lord, that grid for thinking about things will simply be smashed. And that they will be able to move forward into a new way and new relationships. I want to ask, Lord, that you place deep within their hearts the knowledge that the body of your body, the body of the church, is a place where we can stand together and fight together and just break any and every spirit of isolation. And just ask that you will release that sense of body and unity and interdependence. And so we ask right now for all of us that faith will rise, that faith will rise, and that faith will stay strong. Because we know that you have battles for us to fight. We know you have promised lands for us to take. We know that you have treasure for us to discover. In Jesus' name. Amen.